Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Loop Hero, which is a roguelite deck-building idle RPG developed by Four Quarters and published by Devolver Digital for PC in 2021.
Yeah, this episode was executive produced by William. Big thanks to William. If you'd like to executive produce a game, if you're ever thinking, I wish they would do this, you can make that happen. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. We sell that as a thing. Again, we're keeping the lights on.
You can't do it right now. Because,
that is true.
Because it's full up.
In about a month, we'll be opening them up again, but we're going to be booking into 2027 pretty soon.
Yeah. And we'll give notice for like the time when it's going to open up as well. So it's not just like, better move quick, fuckers.
We'd never call you all fuckers.
No,
you're esteemed. Yeah. This is also one of the things to keep in mind with, neither of us like this game very much.
Yeah. That's one thing to keep in mind for this episode.
It's, you know, I always feel a little bad. I don't want to shit on somebody's fave that they picked for the thing. But I do want to give it a fair shot, which I feel like I did. I've been waiting to talk about this because I had a really interesting arc with it. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting game that I ultimately think does not get there.
And people executive produce episodes for a number of reasons.
That is true.
So I have no idea if this is William's, you know, if Loop Hero saved William like from a sinking car, like car sinking in a river.
Depression. Like this was the game that came along at the exact right time.
Yeah.
You know, and never want to fuck with that. Mm-hmm. I just have many unkind things to say about Loop Hero.
And so do I. And it makes a good first impression as part of it. Like I had played this for about 4 or 5 hours, something like that. And I was like, oh, this would be neat to talk about on WoF, because like so far this is a game with a roguelike structure that is working for me. The problem is that there wasn't much beyond what I found in those first 5 hours.
I also had a similar thing where I came upon this on my own volition as a roguelike.
Well, people were talking about it. Yeah,
it had tons of buzz, and I have meta thoughts about that too. We'll get to how this game specifically resists our approach.
Yeah,
you know, but I'd come to it because I'm always looking for something to be like my nighttime game here and break through. And I also had a similar experience, 4 or 5 hours. It's like, oh, cool. Like I probably just I love to put a bunch of time into this at some point.
Yeah,
and attempting to fucked me up, not fucked me up in a good way.
Yeah,
so the world has been destroyed in this game. You have to rebuild it from nothingness, from a void. And your hero is trapped in a loop, like a literal loop, a road that closes in on itself. You're trying to build up a village back home and build up your own power in order to defeat the Lich.
Yes.
That we think the Lich did everything.
Yes. And this plays out with a lot of automatic systems. There is nothing quite like this that I have played. Maybe there's something, after. And definitely each of these systems comes from something else. But like, you have like a deck builder to determine like what kind of terrain and what kind of like obstacles you can put out. You have this kind of roguelike structure where, you know, you want to make it to the end so you can bring your resources back, but you start anew every time. Light RPG elements, there's gear that you're trying to put in. And as you're placing these terrain tiles, you're trying to optimize. Like each of these has little rules and dependencies and kind of these little emergent interactions that will pop out.
Yeah. That are oftentimes you are trying to optimize. You're also trying to discover.
Yes.
These, most of them are untold.
Yeah.
Which is, these are all neat things. Mm-hmm. You know, this is all good. You know, putting tiles next to each other can give you unforeseen effects. You have to remember those and then plan your deck accordingly. Mm-hmm. Next time. All very good.
Yeah.
This is going to be a weird episode though, because, you know, we do have rogue-like rules that apply to this. There's not a whole lot to talk about in this game. Mm-hmm. There's narrative stuff that eventually does kind of happen. Mm-hmm. And there's some of the blandest dialogue that's ever been.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that far because of the immense and ludicrous amount of grind required. Yeah. We'll talk about what like a playthrough looks like of this. But then just imagine having to do that a lot.
Yeah.
To get this. I don't think I have played a roguelike with slower or more stingy meta progression. Mm-hmm. Than this, sincerely.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times you do a run and get no advancement, which is something that people think about roguelikes. Uh-huh. Like, you know, that's going to be the case all the time at roguelites or likes. I use those interchangeably, but mm-hmm. games with this rogue elements. That's not true.
No.
Like people feel that way about like an Isaac, but the first like 10 runs of Isaac, you'll unlock shit. Mm-hmm. Just by doing things in the game that you would naturally do. It's not huge progress. You're not going to feel like you're making huge progress, but you'll get something. Mm-hmm. This is the only roguelite I played in a while where I could have multiple runs in a row where at the end I could not afford anything. Mm-hmm. Did not get any advancement.
Yeah.
Towards the end goal.
Yeah. This is probably the game that we have talked about, one of the games that we have talked about the most, like offline to cover. Yes. For WoW, at least in a long while, right? Both of us kind of put our time with this like a while ago. And I think, you know, we just keep coming back to, you know, the fatal flaw in this being this, you know, the stinginess, the slowness of this progression. It does not feel good.
Yes.
To me. It plays into every stereotype of a roguelike that I had before I got exposed to more of them.
It makes me feel like, right? That. Exactly. Yeah. Like it gives me the perspective of, oh, this is what roguelites feel like to people who have no tolerance for a slow progression.
Yeah.
Meta progression, or for that kind of stutter stop meta progression. Mm-hmm.
And also, like, you know, you can decide what kind of run you want to do, you know, mm-hmm. based on a number of different factors, your class and things like that. And the solution to what we're talking about is to set out like in a very dedicated way to pursue a particular resource, to farm it. Mm-hmm. And farming doesn't feel good.
No, farming is, I don't have those rods and cones to see the fun of that.
Yeah. That's very imprecise to say farming doesn't feel good. It's just
for some folk, it's the best thing that gaming can do.
Yes.
You know, like reading about like Chris Kohler's book talking about grinding in a specific dungeon, Final Fantasy V.
Yeah.
And like approaching Nirvana. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is a good feeling.
Yeah.
For some people.
At just most roguelikes, you can make a ton of progress by pursuing the main goal. And that feels good to me. It is, you know, like kind of a very broad, you know, bigger version of like trying to master a boss fight. In Dark Souls, right? It's just like, okay, I just keep on taking tries at this. I, you know, change things. I maybe, you know, get some stuff on the way, and then suddenly I'm able to do it again because, you know, through a combination of, you know, learning and avatar power, right?
Yeah.
You know, that is the game to me.
And this, you know, it really downplays that. There's two other big differences.
Yeah.
You know, and this is getting a little ahead, but I'm not sure where these would end up in generalities.
Yeah, yeah.
Between this and other roguelites, one is it does not contain offboarding points.
Yeah.
Roguelites tend to have a place where you can say you beat it, mm-hmm. even if you didn't really, really beat it. Like you can beat Mom and be like, hell yeah, okay, I've had an Isaac experience. Mm-hmm. You know, you can beat the dragon in enter the gungeon and say like, I beat gungeon.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to do. But you mm-hmm. said you've beat it.
Yeah.
This game doesn't have that. Second, the way more fatal thing that I've never seen is that feeling of going over and over to increase your knowledge and avatar power that you do in this via farming. Mm-hmm. The runs tend to be more different.
Yeah.
Because of the slow unlock method in this, having runs feel meaningfully different did not happen to me in my time in this.
Yeah.
Yes, I unlocked other classes. They don't feel that crazy different. Mm-hmm. The beginning of every run is always the same.
Yeah.
Like always, you don't have the, you know, I'm always comparing things to Isaac because like if you put a gun to my head and it was like a truth gun, I'd probably have to say that's my favorite video game. Like there are games I like more than that. But like in terms of my bones,
yeah,
love Isaac. One of the things is the very first floor can feel 100% different depending on what you get.
Yeah.
And this happens relatively early on. Like you have a shallower unlock pool, but you can still stumble upon something that's really, really changes the way you play. Oftentimes in a power-up way, sometimes just in a sideways way.
Yeah.
Not the case in this game. There are surprisingly few surprises once you get past all of the tile synergies.
Yeah.
And you can build towards those. There's a satisfaction to that. It's still, you can't build towards it reliably because it adds this random chance element of deck building towards it. And it just ends up making getting to that point feel so fucking samey.
Yeah.
Like starting a run was never fun in this.
No.
For me, I end up finding fun once things got going. But once I died and had to go back, I'd go back to the village, not really be able to unlock anything meaningful. Like perhaps my potions heal 1% more. And then go back and just like, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay. Top gun from the top.
Yeah. Once you figure out your heuristic for like, you know, the three or four intended outcomes that you might have. And I feel like that's a little bit generous. You know, you kind of, that's a little bit it. You know, and you run out of the unlock pool for the tiles and stuff, relatively early on. I think all of that combines with the heavily automatic nature of everything that, you know, in order to make this just, you know, like neither fish nor fowl, nor lichen, nor, nor mammal, coral, nor avian. Yeah.
it adds that and it, but you can't entirely, it's not completely an idle game.
Yeah.
Like it's so weird and doesn't work in an interesting way.
Yeah.
So Four Quarters, the developer here is a Russian indie game studio. Their only previous game was Please Don't Touch Anything, where you play somebody covering a coworker's break in a room with a button that launches nukes.
Fun little like multiple ending, almost like a don't shit your pants kind of thing.
Yeah. Classic little browser art game kind of thing.
Yeah. I played a VR version of that. That was pretty fun as well. The concept for Loop Hero came about from a discussion of what's called zero player games, which is kind of an umbrella term that includes idle and incremental games, but also has stuff like Progress Quest, stuff like Conway's Game of Life in there as well. Just the idea that it's systems that set up and go and there's minimal interaction from the player. And this led to this idea of like, a hero that's in a loop that a player builds things around them. You are not playing the hero, you are messing with the circumstances that they go through.
And that is a concept that can lead to great stuff.
Yes.
Anytime you're designing a dungeon, you know, that's how you get like deception. We have to do a Tecmo's deception at some point on the show. It's crazy that we haven't.
Yeah. There are a bunch of those on like the PlayStation Plus kind of service. I was just browsing through that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're interesting. Like they're all really neat. Like you can do something with this concept. The idea was fleshed out further from a Ludum Dare in 2019 that had the theme Start With Nothing. So that version that was built formed the basis for what they eventually would pitch to Devolver Digital to make the full version.
And the most difficult thing that they, you know, the difficult part of building this out to something full was keeping things in balance. And they kind of did the trying to keep Pinchy perfectly balanced kind of thing. You know, like, oh, do we add fresh water or salt in order to satisfy the lobster or the fish? And so, like, when something was broken or it gave you too much of an advantage, they would sometimes add, like, new systems or interactions to add downsides to that. And they just kind of kept going.
Yeah. Yep. A gamedeveloper.com postmortem has a big list of development tools that include GameMaker Studio 2, FL Studio, Windows XP version of MS Paint, things like that. This is a very minimalist game aesthetically, to its credit.
It looks really good. Yeah.
I like how it looks a lot. It's giving like Ultima 3.
In the
overhead map.
The closest like visual comparison I could think of that we have done is Scald. Yeah.
It's giving.
It's giving.
Come I'm 45. On, hey, kids.
No, we have to stay. You know, it's not like, oh, you need to do hello, my fellow kids. Language can evolve.
Yeah. But yeah, it is. It's serving. It's giving. It's serving cunt left and right.
Oh yeah. Just whipping it out like Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's exactly what Loop Hero serves cunt. That is actually the magazine ad they had to cut.
It looks a little bit like an early 90s game, so it might fit.
Yeah, I guess that's true. No.
Fucking
it would be like serves your cunt in that case. It'd probably be more aggressive.
Yeah, true.
Early 90s.
FL Studio. That's so fun.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Good.
We played this in part when we first played it because it got tons of praise. It sold really well. It reviewed really well. It's in the low 80s, but it was a buzz game.
Yeah,
for a while. Mm-hmm. Mobile and console ports followed after this, as makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because Four Quarters is a Russian studio, sales of the game were affected by Russia's invasion of Ukraine 2022. The team encouraged people elsewhere to pirate it if sanctions stopped them from buying it legitimately. So good on them.
Yep.
There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the studio has not had another commercial release since. They do have small projects on their itch.io page. They've continued participating in Ludum Dare kind of stuff. I've not checked any of it out, but at least little descriptions make it sound like they've got a few ideas in their pocket.
Neat
little ideas. Who knows what will grow out of them. Talking about this, like being a buzz game a little bit, like there's a whole wave of things that I have missed, but have been exposed to a lot through the level because the people over there tend to really get into auto battlers.
Yeah.
This is a genre that is popular. I do not get it.
I tried one and I fucking lost my mind. I was just like,
I tried playing Snake RX, which I think they talked about for like 50 episodes in a row. And I was like, I don't get it, man.
Yeah.
Auto battlers are a land of contrasts. A lot of stuff about them, I have no insight into it. But I feel like this kind of like this hit alongside a bunch of those for me.
There was a time in the turn of the 2020s in which we were not interested in playing video games. We wanted them to play themselves.
Yeah.
The Vampire Survivors legacy of like the world is ending. Mm-hmm. I just need something that does itself.
Yeah.
Was powerful.
Yes.
Like we talk about being a buzz game, also, one of the things that I have long had a theory that like one of the reasons for my specific out of stepness with critical consensus on some things is because I try to play things through.
Yeah.
People who review games don't.
Yeah.
They can't. Like mm-hmm. a lot of the time. Sometimes they can, but a lot of times they can't. And this game makes a good impression. I understand how this could achieve a lot of buzz. A lot of people are playing it, having a good time in that first 5 hours and be like, oh, this is something really special.
Yeah.
And just they eventually fell off it, probably where I did. Not always, some mm-hmm. people really like this, but enough people probably fell off it where I did, but that just doesn't get talked about.
Yeah.
There's a class of video game, commentary person, and they're just moving on to the next thing. And that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's useful. It's good. It's more normal than whatever I do. But because I don't do that, because I come into things late mm-hmm. and then try to, like, get into them deep, I get fooled by that initial impression a lot.
Yeah.
And then this is on top of the gotta write something mm-hmm. take economy of stuff. I used to call it the Daredevil effect because Netflix is Daredevil. Or not Daredevil, Stranger Things effect. Yeah. Because people were like, this is fucking game changing. And I liked the first season of Stranger Things just fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
This is like, it's a solid B. It's okay.
Yeah, it's
good. But people talked about it like it was going to destroy, the arts and rebuild them anew.
Yeah. And just not. Some things is just okay.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, you can, but that isn't something worth writing online.
Mm-hmm.
This feels a little bit like that. Like, this does feel like it's hinting at things that are brand new by synthesis of things that are brand old. Mm-hmm. And then does hook you with that, learning that
mm-hmm.
as a thing. But I feel like if I looked at all those people who had written, like, really glowing takes about this and stuff, I imagine more of them have seen a UFO than have finished this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that supports deep scrutiny.
Yeah.
So it thrives in a world in which deep scrutiny is not really the name of the game.
Yeah. And then that clangs against our approach. I didn't see this through to the end. I got a button about 15 hours in.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I beat the first boss, unlocked the classes. Yes. Tried the classes.
Yeah. But it, you know, playing this was like a little bit of the experience of like, oh, I really enjoyed jumping off that diving board and the first 3 feet of water. Pretty cool. Things pretty are going real well.
Pretty good feet. Yeah.
There are only 2 more feet of water, though, is what I found out. Yes. Picking it back up and trying this again. It's like, oh, okay.
Not bummer. Yeah.
You know, like the only thing the only big system that I didn't get to was like placing rivers, which changes the way you have to design the map if you are playing something that will benefit from having rivers.
Yes. That ends up when you read a lot about it. We're a little bit in the I never want to see the word kill box again thing in terms of trying to read what like being good at this means. So there's a story. An evil lich has cast a spell, destroyed the world and everything in it. And you wake up in a void. You don't remember what happened, but you see a camp and this path and you begin walking. And as you remember details of the world, they appear. Yes. These are your tiles that you're going to put in. The camp is fixed. Everything around it changes. And so do the memories of the townspeople that we gather here as we go.
So like as you unlock stuff, they're like, oh, that was always there. What are you talking about? You're the only person venturing out and seeing this stuff. And since this is imitating, you know, console RPGs, you know, the lich is not the real bad guy. He was just working at the behest of God. This being that used to be called Alpha when he was making stuff, you know, him sowing, and then when he started reaping, he's like, oh, this sucks, became Omega, because he became disenchanted with humanity.
Yeah, perfectly. You can find thematic resonance there. There's perfectly cromulent setup. The story that's doled out as you recreate the world has your hero realize that, you know, that things seem like they're terrible for life, you know, that seem like they're terrible are actually necessary for the balance, necessary to human thriving. Again, age old message.
Here.
This is done through what I consider to be pretty lifeless dialogue.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be like jokes a minute or something like that, but there are attempts at pathos that for me did not work. Particularly well. It's not egregious, but what I'm saying is one of the extrinsic rewards you can have in playing a roguelite like this is story and dialogue. I wasn't playing this to get the next narrative segment. That was not a driver for me in this.
A conversation between a person and a vampire is supposed to be really interesting.
Yeah. And boy, did they make vampires pretty boring in this.
So you go through these bosses. It's the lich, two kind of unrelated people, and then God himself. And then, you know, then you beat him.
Eugene and Rusty, God.
and then you set about rebuilding the world without this force of destruction having come in. But 1,000 years later, he's going to revive, and who knows what will happen then.
Okie doke. Before the run, there's some things you have to do. You have this expedition screen. This is where you customize your deck. You have kind of a quota of cards from different categories, like a minimum and a maximum of them, of points, kind of like a build system there.
Once you get enough cards, like specifically for the terrain, this can become interesting, especially when you start thinking about how they interact with classes. Necromancers don't need much HP, so you might not need to bring on mountains, right?
That takes a long time for that to happen. It's just this is interesting eventually.
Yes.
You select your class, just the warrior is available from the start. Here. And once you unlock new chapters, you select which chapter you want to play. This determines enemy stats, your own bonuses, which boss you're going to face. The fact that you can just go back and play old chapters is necessary for the fact that you farm in this. We'll talk about what getting resources looks like when we talk about the run itself.
There are some resources that are only available in later chapters.
Yes.
So you can't just like, you know, set this to go on chapter one and then just do constant milk runs and get where you need to go.
But you will need like, I still need whatever this basic resource is. I ran on this thing. I have to go back and do a run.
You're going to need wood.
It reminds me a little bit of Subnautica in that respect. Like you can unlock biomes with rare resources, but then you have to go fishing for iron every once in a while.
So let's talk about what a run looks like and kind of how it plays out. So you've got blackness, and then this circuit appears, you know, a road with bends and turns that ultimately goes back to where it begins at your camp. Where the village is, and your hero walks it automatically. And you can, you know, change the speed. I did find an option to speed up the battles too. That is something.
You need that. But even then, I felt like I wanted it to be faster.
Yeah.
I had a real, this cannot be the max speed of this, because like when you get into a cruising altitude mm-hmm. of this, where you want to just build up some resources and XP, when it's actually an idler, you are playing an idler. Mm-hmm. So you're not doing anything for several tracks mm-hmm. around this thing.
Yeah.
Except checking new equipment, which like, you know how fun it is in Diablo to compare blue to you know, to white. Uh-huh. We get to do that a lot in this.
Yeah, yeah. The battles are strange because there's nothing you can do to influence them. So the speed is whatever. But you can pause this if you want to. Adventure mode and planning mode. Getting back to the fire will heal you a little bit. And it also powers up the monsters. So you know, don't want to, you know, just walk as fast as you can and, you know, cycle this up, because you'll run into like an oblivion scaling problem, right?
Yeah. Your goal in this is to power up at the same pace or better than the enemies.
Yes.
The enemies spawn depending on your terrain and how many days it passes. The loop will take several days. The sun will go up and down. You'll get things that modify this, like first thing, you know, it's after sunrise, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And enemies spawn on a day timer. You get tiles that can manipulate time and certain squares as well, make like days count for 2 days.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Useful for farming. If you want just a shitload of spiders everywhere, you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So combat takes place automatically, in a visual style that emulates like Final Fantasy I a little bit. And there's kind of an active time battle. Everybody has their own attack speed. And everybody targets their opponents randomly. This is a problem.
Which is, there's not, if this were manual, the game would not work as it is.
Oh God, no.
You know, having to choose to fight these slimes, like it would just be Final Fantasy I, but you can never leave the surroundings of Corneria.
Uh-huh.
You know, it'd be intolerable. This doesn't do that.
No.
But what it means is that like when you're on those cruise control elements, you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like, and when you die, when you're not on cruise control, you have already made the mistake that is going to kill your character if you're going to lose.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do once battle starts. It's all preparation, sometimes preparation that was many loops back.
Yes.
You know, in terms of making sure you don't outpace things.
What I found myself wanting was like a battle posture selector. Mm. You know, like aggressive, you know, defensive, focus down, spread, you know, spread out.
Yeah.
Like you could, that you could choose depending on like what kind of build you had. Other, you know, just the attacking randomly is the big problem to me.
Yeah. I that would have been useful to me. I don't think it would have saved it.
It wouldn't have saved it, but I found myself crying out for it.
I wanted something. Chapter one enemies just hit you physically. So eventually we're going to get more than that. And as you progress through chapters, they start using special abilities.
Yes.
You get buffs, debuffs, things like that. When you fight, you get a card. And these cards go down along the bottom of the screen. You have kind of like a Mahjong tile set. There are three kinds of cards. Cards you place on the road. This is where monsters spawn usually. So this is like a forest that's going to spawn wolves or a spider nest that's going to spawn spiders, shit like that. They'll tell you the rules of how often they do that. Cards that are placed near a road, which add monsters or modification tiles. So these are things like lights that will make lower the amount of monsters that spawn, or light posts that increase everyone's attack speed, including monsters, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then terrain cards, which you place all around the darkness of the map.
Yes.
And these are kind of you doing a little map building thing to modify your base stats. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of where that those things that we like are actually bad for us. The things that are bad for us, we actually should like. Mm-hmm. Theming comes through mechanically in that the cards have a downside.
Yes.
The most basic example is mountains. You're going to put mountains down because they increase your HP.
Yes.
You're especially as the warrior. Mm-hmm. After you put down a few too many mountains down there, goblin camps appear. And those are a high-level enemy.
Those goblins fuck me up so much.
Yeah, they're tough. Like that, they are likely to be the first thing that kills you as you play through the game.
Yeah.
So you need this. You need this XP. But you know, we were talking about the pinchy balancing tank. They really overbalance it in like an uninteresting way, because like you just get that HP, but as soon as you do, here's something to take it. Like it is not good game design to be perfectly balanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about that a lot. I don't think you can find the fun very easily. And every time I get a plus one to attack, they get a plus one to defense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's not strictly that here, but it's closer than I'd like.
Yeah. In the past, I've, you know, referred to this, you know, kind of game stat as swinginess, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And like, to me, like, this is the entire game, is the strategy of what to put where and learning how they kind of interact, managing your hand to, you know, to make sure that something valuable doesn't fall off, even if you can't place it right now without a huge downside.
Or not managing your hand, because when things fall off, you get resources for it.
Yes.
Like, this is good. Like, we're just, this is a cool system we're describing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you talk about the game being where you place stuff, I wished, you know, because in battle, I was not making meaningful choices, and I didn't even really feel like I was making that meaningful of a choice at character select at this point. I wanted more of these to matter more.
Yeah.
You know, just an inelegant sentence, but like, I knew I had to place a good number of rocks, even despite the goblins.
Yeah.
Because I needed, you know, to put rocks despite goblins. I knew I needed to do that because I needed the HP for the boss. Mm-hmm. I needed to put as many meadows as I could. There's no downside to meadows, the heal, you know, things like that. I had some strategy in terms of choosing where monsters would spawn. Like, you choose where on the track they'll go. You know, do you want them when you're fresh from the fight? Is this thing you can like mop up at the end?
Yeah.
Where do you put a tile that might give you a treasure? You know, special treasure, things like that.
Yeah, figuring out which enemies that spawn will roam is a part of it too. Because like, you know, ruins, you get good stuff by walking through those. However, those spawn, I forget what they're called, the enemies. Like, oh, the worms. The worms will do ranged combat. So like, they'll spawn and they'll roam. And like, you may be dealing with their attacks while you're fighting other stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And so like, oh, well, I need to like space those out from, you know, from other things. I need to really manage how many of those I put down.
Yes. Once you kind of figure that out, there's no more decision to it.
Yeah.
Was my problem. Like, that is an interesting problem to solve the one time. Mm-hmm. You know, figuring out how it works. Like, oh, like a vampire is going to join whatever's close.
Yes.
To this to fight it and going to be a little bit of a tough character. Mm-hmm. Towns are cool. That, you know, I want that extra healing and I want the extra XP that comes from quests, but it does mean one monster randomly is going to be really tough.
Yeah.
On my way, like, I had to do a limited number of towns.
Mm-hmm. It's neat when you place a vampire mansion next to a town. It will kill it for three rounds, but then it turns out the vampires are really good mayor.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a super town.
That's one of the, it's a marquee call out. Yes. Like, everyone's like, oh man, but you don't think so, but put a vampire next to a town here. All that stuff is neat.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the game, you're discovering this stuff and it's fun.
Yes.
There are also tiles that will meld together to make like super tiles there. Like, so 9 mountains or rocks makes a mountain, mountain peak, which gives a big HP boost. But then harpies will randomly join the road. And a lot of times these minor enemies are not a big deal at all. Yeah. You're dealing with like, what is the density you can take?
Yeah. And figuring out how many of them you want to, you know, you want about. Something that is interesting as you unlock different kinds of terrain, does, you know, change some of the placement strategy a little bit, like getting, unlocking the sands, like the deserts, and the dunes around the same time I unlocked the necromancer. It's like, okay, why would I want to place these tiles that reduce the HP of everything, you know, by 0.5%, by 1%. And it's like, oh, well, if you're playing a class or if you're doing a build that doesn't really require a lot of HP, suddenly the downside for the enemies is so much more than the downside for you, because you can mitigate it and they can't.
Yes. Like, there's interesting choices to be made.
Yeah.
There, that you slowly kind of amble towards a build. This plays into with equipment as well, which we'll talk about. You can find equipment, kind of subtypes that will synergize with whatever you're going for with this.
Yeah.
You can undo some placements. You get Oblivion cards. They'll pop up on your list. This can either get rid of all the enemies in a chunk on the path, or get rid of a tile, and then get rid of tiles that you didn't spawn as well.
Yeah.
So you can use these to get rid of goblin camps, for example.
Yeah. You know, place all of the villages you want, because the bandit camps can just be, you know, banished.
Yeah, oblivioned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to get your guys... So on the base game, without spawning any enemies, you just get slimes, and these are a really bad XP thing. You want to balance the enemies getting stronger in each loop with your character getting enough XP to level up, and get enough equipment opportunities to meaningfully upgrade your equipment, but you don't want to be too worn down by the time you get to camp.
Right. And camp does not fully heal you. No. So you end up kind of seeing, you know, on a bad run, this kind of attrition where like, okay, I'm limping by cycle 4.
Yeah.
It's not going to cut it.
And that's when you cut your losses and go home.
Yeah.
Which you can do. And you can do that with these little farming runs as well. You can kind of come in to not make any progress just to get resources.
Yes.
You get resources from your cards falling off your Mahjong tile board or from passing certain tiles. And such. Yeah. You know, we talked about you needing wood. That's something that comes from forest. You know, doggos come from forest, but also wood.
Yes.
Comes from that.
Yeah. Stone comes from cemeteries, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Enemies will drop gear. Like, this is the other thing that you're managing, but it's like you said, you're doing gear comparisons and trying to figure out, like, okay, you know, this is a really good piece of, you know, piece of gear. Do I want to switch from critical attacks to attacking everybody?
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, well, just I factor that in. I try it out. You can, like, pin gear that you don't want to fall off the back if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a thing too where it, you know, I made a comparison to Diablo earlier. It's not strictly like higher level equal better. Mm-hmm. That heuristic will serve you when you first start, but eventually you're going to want to start building synergies and stuff. One of the things that was frustrating to me about this is that at least on the Warrior, it did feel like there were correct answers.
Yeah.
For this, like regen was just really big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for this, like piling on regen made it easy.
Yeah.
To do this.
Vampirism. Vampirism and attack speed together.
Yeah. Vampirism was my thing for the thief because he started with some vampirism as a thing, like natural vampirism.
Yes.
But like you can do these different kind of builds. Like it doesn't have to be that. You can also do, you know, vampirism, regen. There's what else is there? Chance to, like, I think there's like a chance to stun thing that you can get from time to time. No, that's a feat.
Yeah. There's attack all that you can do as well. Yeah.
With like splash damage, essentially, things like that. And you can build towards those things.
Mm-hmm. The frustrating part is that there's a right answer if you want to beat the run.
Yes.
Because different bosses, like you can go into the fight with the Lich with attack all. It's not going to do shit.
No.
Fucked up. The way you like to play was bad, actually.
Yes. It just doesn't work. It might help you get there, but you have to plan for the thing. And there's no way to plan for it in advance. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The boss. Yeah. When you're getting this gear, like a Diablo or a Neo or any number of just scourges on fucking gaming, you are just going to drop tons of it. You're going to spend a lot of your time in this game hovering over equipment to read if it is a slightly better stat in what you're building for.
It's like sorting your email inbox.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
Like you, and some people, again, don't mind that. They like the loot pinata thing. This drove me crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted there to be a filter for what I would see, not a way to, you know, star items so they wouldn't fall off.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to click a thing that said, just show me shit with vampirism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't...
I need filters like sorting an email inbox.
Exactly. And that's... Does that sound like a game to you? Like, the fact that I'm looking for these ease of use things, they're not adding fun things. They're ease of use.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Frustrating. But that is what you're doing. Is taking this stuff and kind of making a preferred build while your equipment gets higher level as you fight higher level monsters.
Yeah. Beyond deciding what kind of build you want to make and then searching for the cards that have those, the only other interesting thing that I could think of with the gear is that it has levels that kind of just denote the general quality of it, but also they're color-coded. But like the color code doesn't, it's not like rarity and like how good it is. It's how many different stats it has.
Yes.
And, you know, depending on what's available to you and what you're going for, like an orange level 5, you know, attack all halberd or whatever might not be better than just like the regular one, because the regular one just like maximizes the preferred stat. The main stat is always going to be diminished whenever more stats are added on.
Yes.
So
yeah, so it might do less damage and have higher attack speed, which you might be building for, but it might just have less damage and then also do, as you mentioned, like attack all or pure damage. Pure damage is actually really good because it's added. The game does not communicate this to you on its own, but it's added to your damage, so pure damage is very good.
Yeah.
And when we talk about like this being this level up thing, your character's leveling up, you're getting new equipment, you have to like nickel and dime earn yourself even the ability to get feats in this. Like they start you so behind zero.
Yeah.
On this, in terms of working up to things that are fun to do in video games. Mm-hmm. Like eventually you'll start getting feats as well as you level up. This is something that's unlocked through the metagame. So you've got it a little bit later, but like this is part of the run soon enough. And these are really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting choice. Like every couple loops, I'm going to make an interesting choice that will meaningfully change things. Like a one-time, like decent resurrection, being able to, my first attack in the morning stuns. Mm-hmm. Everything or the first battle in the, every morning starts everything stunned, things like that.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to get this though through this odious meta progression system.
Yeah. I didn't get this until, you know, a few hours in.
Yeah.
Right. And like these, you're given a choice of three when you level up. One of them will let you kind of reroll, but it's like a draft. For them. And, you know, they are mostly going to be based on your class. There are some that everybody gets access to, and there are some that are unlocked after you beat a boss. So that's another reason to do like previous chapters is to, you know, beat that boss and then get more of the good ones.
Yeah. The resources you unlock as you go through, you have it here in the notes as like things, cents and dollars, which is a good way to put it, like bits and chunks. You get littles and bigs. This is very slow. Mm-hmm. Not every run is going to give you enough to unlock a permanent upgrade, especially not a meaningful one. You know, I mentioned earlier, plus 1% healing on healing potions. That's just a ability. That's not an exaggeration on my part. that is something I could afford after a thing and then could do the whole thing and got to see the amazing difference that 1% of healing, you know, 20% of my health did.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So like
we're talking about the leaving, the risk reward of leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. They want you to cut your losses at this point. You never lose everything if you die.
Yes.
You lose 30% of what you've, or you lose 70% of what you've gathered. Mm-hmm. You can retreat on the road with 60%, or you can retreat at camp and get take all your stuff with you. So it's wanting you to make the interesting decision of, do I push my luck?
Yes.
That makes sense as a thing. Getting to camp thinking, I probably can't make another run. Mm-hmm. Going back to camp and not being able to do anything meaningful felt really bad to me. Yeah. I know I'm hammering on that, but it's such a essential ingredient to the feel-good formula of roguelites. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to feel like I am making progress in some sense, even if it is kind of granular, very drastic.
It's a little bit like buying something on layaway.
Yeah.
I had a formative experience when the PS2 came out. You know, it's like, I think that was one of the first systems that I bought with my own money. And I did it on layaway at a Hills department store. Mm-hmm. And like each time I went in to put like $20 or something down on it, it was the least satisfying thing in the world because I didn't have my money and I didn't have my PlayStation 2.
Layaway, I don't even know if layaway still exists.
Yeah,
it's like buying it on credit except reverse. You don't get it.
Yeah.
Until you have it. The reason behind it would be it might sell out. Mm-hmm. So you can put something on layaway. They'll hold it for you and let you pay it in installments, but they hold on to it until they get all their money.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. It was like, so you'd see it in commercials for like discredited department stores like Venture. And she would be like, now you can put it on layaway. And I remember asking my parent, like one of whichever parent happened to be around at the time, what is layaway? And then explaining it to me and me saying, why would anyone want to do that? And they said, I don't know. And the TV had just been like, we can fucking do it. It's awesome. Enjoy doing stuff in layaway.
Yeah. For no reason. You can do this if you want. Yeah.
Like it's pre-credit. And there was credit at the time, but it was before like everybody got credit in a predatory nastiness.
Yeah. It's not pre-order.
No, it's Boy, it's a weird thing. It does feel like that, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just, sure, I did put in 60 cents into my savings account. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, like, you know, later on, like, later chapters, like, again, it expects you to, you know, okay, so I'm aiming to unlock, like, the Intel Center. I'm aiming to unlock the library. This requires a particular orb that is made of, living string. Yes. And living string will only, you know, pop when you kill something. It's got a soul, so you you can show him nude or say you can't show him nude. And so like, okay, what cards do I need to take in order to maximize the number of things with souls that I kill?
Yeah, right. But that's the decision you've made.
Yes.
And then you just do a loop hero ass run.
Yeah. And like then sometimes you get enough and sometimes you don't.
Yeah. It's also a thing too where late game resources, or I didn't get to the late game, mid game resources though, become, some of them are pretty rare. Mm-hmm. And they're ones that you are going to want to need in such volume that you want to start collecting them basically from the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And there's no way to know it.
Yes.
It's for just kind of starting a fresh save or just being like, well, shows me. Now I understand that this is really valuable to me.
Yeah. There's also a resource, like, I was like, oh, I'm getting a whole bunch of these. And it's like, no, that's not going to contribute to buying anything. So, like, getting it feels good. Instead, what that is unlocking lore in the encyclopedia.
Yeah. That was a very fun feel bad. to be like, fuck.
So, a run will end when you die or when you have placed enough tiles in order to fill up the boss's meter. It's like, okay, like you have drawn the attention of this chapter's boss or of this run's boss. And then, it'll show up and you're going to get there. There are no more loops. And you know, just prepare to fight it. If you have like a certain option checked, you can, have it pause before you go into the boss fight when you end a loop.
So you can escape if you'd rather.
Yeah, if you want to go back with a full run's worth of resources without risking the boss.
It's kind of nasty. The boss always happens before the heal.
Yeah.
The boss will spawn right before you can actually sleep at the camp, even if you can run. Mm-hmm. So you can't set up the boss like, I'm going to finish this loop and get all the stuff from it and then hit the boss fresh.
Yeah.
The bosses all are, like, I want to say puzzle boss, but that's not correct. They have like a concept, like they have a counter.
Yeah.
There is no way to know this in advance.
Yeah.
I've got them listed specifically later on down.
Yeah.
Say what?
I have them listed specifically later on. Yeah.
We'll talk about those guys, but like in terms of the loop of doing it or the feeling of doing it, you just had to kind of throw a run away.
Yeah.
On them. Like you go through, you get to the guy, you're feeling pretty good, but you didn't counter their strategy.
Yeah.
So like, you know, may as well just try again. You may get worse luck, worse equipment the second try. That may not get you to the boss.
Yeah. That happens once. You learn what their thing is. And then it's like, all right, well, you could say, okay, it's interesting because like the strategy that's good for a run is not going to be good for this. The thing I've been relying on is specifically thwarted by what I find at the end. Again, you run into this shallowness, you know, kind of thing though, because there's only one answer for it. There aren't variants or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can find a thing that will basically carry you through the run and the boss for the first boss, you know, but again, once you solve that problem, you're not doing anything. Like all of the work you're doing, all of the game in this is not playing the game.
Yeah.
It's kind of just doing that prep part through there, which I understand is the point, but it's not a good point.
Yeah. And I'm more amenable to like, oh, you do the prep. Like this is, you know, this is something.
You love
the
gambit system.
It's but it's just like, okay, I tweak around with the conditions around this in order to make sure, you know, I watch it go and I trim and I prune and then suddenly I've got something that can make it happen. That's like factory games, right?
Yes. Yeah. This is, it's not a good version of it, at least to me.
Yeah.
You have classes in this that you unlock. They use different equipment. They have different stats. The first two do not feel that different to me.
Yeah, it took
which
me
is a
minute.
Big problem.
It took me a minute to figure out what the thing with rogues was.
Yeah, there is a difference, but they don't feel worlds different to me.
Yeah.
The warrior is the basic one. Physical fighter, you want high armor. I mean, do counterattacks, vampirism, damage to all. They don't start with innate vampirism. Rogues start with innate vampirism, but these guys can do it.
Yeah.
They're basically blank slates.
Yeah. And no major advantages or disadvantages. It's just like the basic playthrough. There are no like other considerations that you have to make.
Big advantage is like high HP.
Yeah,
you can get astronomical HP with these guys.
Yes. But that can only be so useful. Right.
Yeah. And it's going to spawn a bunch of goblins.
Yeah. When we say vampirism, what we mean is you regain HP when you hit. Yes.
Yeah.
It's drain. Yeah.
The rogue is the second class you unlock. And this one, you end up wanting to have focus. So you want to have overlapping gear stats. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's encouraging you into a build for reasons I can't understand that don't actually make as big a difference as you want it to. You don't get equipment directly. You get trophies that you turn in for gear at a new loop. What this means is you're doing all of your gear comparison stuff at once, mm-hmm. rather than throughout the thing.
Yeah.
Did you find a strategy for this?
Yeah. So what this is, rogues are made for hypercharged farming runs is what I saw, which is equipment that falls off of that overflows from your limited inventory. For other classes, will turn only into a couple of different resources. Trophies are little tickets that can turn into anything, any of the basic ones. You're only going to get a certain amount of gear at the end of a different run. Everything else just turns into resources.
End of a different loop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's another way to get resources.
Yeah. It's a more effective and fast way to say okay, well, all of these, weapons that I'm picking up, or what would be weapons, are going to contribute to the metagame in a way that just getting the gear and being able to stay alive, will not. You're still getting gear. You're still making these decisions. It's just not happening throughout a loop. It is happening, at the beginning of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it just didn't feel that in terms of how I played it.
Oh, it doesn't feel different at all.
Yeah, they have innate vampirism. They have slightly different stats because mm-hmm. they have different equipment they can equip. Obviously something like evasion. They slightly favor evasion and attack speed.
Yeah, evasion and attack speed critical is what I saw with this.
We can build for them. Yeah. But they have this different interaction model that feels slightly different.
Yeah.
And then the third class, the necromancer, is the most different. Mm-hmm. This is a caster. He summons skeletons to fight with him. Yeah. So you have different stats like number of skeletons and level of skeleton.
Skeleton quality.
Yes, skeleton quality, which I like.
Yeah. The higher the stats are, the better the skeleton is. So it'll come in it might be a big tanky one that can, take more. It might be a caster skeleton that can hit everybody, stuff like that. And your attack speed just determines how many of them you can, bring in. Mm-hmm. And enemies attack at random. So sometimes they'll attack a skeleton. Sometimes they'll attack you. Your durability on this isn't armor, HP, or evasion. It's your magic shield. You can get some armor as the necromancer, but the magic shield is a per fight temporary hit point kind of deal.
Spirit hearts in Isaac terms. Yeah. They're a spirit heart caster. Yeah. That's a really powerful feat. You can get that for everybody. Mm-hmm. A bunch of spirit hearts, and that's really, really good.
Yeah.
Those are the three. Mm-hmm. That's it. They don't play the necromancer plays differently, mm-hmm. In terms of, but the interaction model of this game necessitates feeling pretty samey.
Yeah.
Based on who you're playing, because it's not about the play part of it.
Yeah. When they interact with traits, those feats that you get, that can substantially change a run within the bounds for what is substantial within Loop Hero. Yes. I had a lot of good luck with the Necromancer because those feats are really powerful. There are ones where you start each loop with a retinue of durable skeletons that carry over between runs. Mm-hmm. Or ones where
loops.
Yeah, between loops. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm not trying to be pedantic. It just
incredible. It matters. When a skeleton is killed, you get healed or you get a boost to a particular stat. You can make fun decisions around that. When I was, succeeding and getting to the end of loops, Necromancer was the class that I was using.
Yeah. It's the density of decisions you're making is low. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And the downside for the Necromancer is that there's a late game tile that you just can't use, the outpost guard towers.
Yeah,
because the guards will shoot at you because you're, committing a sin against life.
Yeah. Yep. And those are little backup spots you can create for other classes where you'll have kind of artillery.
Yeah.
Helping you. The metagame is the village screen. This is where you spend those resources and build a little town. You build little buildings, you upgrade the buildings through here. This is through a tech tree of buildings they show you of big, pleasingly chunky tiles, look like flashcards. Mm-hmm. Each one has an ability or a perk, and you place them on this grid with rules and dependencies to kind of do a little town building thing. Mm-hmm. Buildings cost a lot of the resource chunks, the bigger thing. So progress is slow. Early on, you will unlock the first couple buildings with some alacrity. like one or two runs each.
Your herbalist hut, you know, your field kitchen, you're going to get those.
You're going to get the, you know, the things that allow you to, and that thing that allows you to get perks. Like the basics, the things that you should start with in a game, you unlock with some quickness.
Yes.
It's worth saying not so much quickness that you're guaranteed to get one per run.
No.
Or anything like that. Some buildings will improve your starting stats. Some, you know, you can improve the village. Mm-hmm. So when you loop, you get more bonuses. And you can upgrade your individual buildings to get better versions of it. That 1% healing, getting another potion. Mm-hmm. You know, potions are just auto-use because, of course, they are. We get down to a certain amount, you'll use a potion. You can get it so you start with more.
Yes.
Or you get more replenished per loop. Things like that.
Yeah. In addition to building them, building these, you want to upgrade them as well, which again takes different resources that you gather very, very slowly.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are, this is where you're going to get systems, which we're going to talk about, supply and crafting here. You unlock those. And then eventually you'll unlock cards as well. And this includes golden cards, which are big run modifiers.
Yes.
And this includes new terrain. You had mentioned rivers, deserts.
Yeah.
Things like that, that allow you to have kind of big game. You're going to get them in bulk, and each one makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Or they make a big difference in aggregate, rather. You're going to place a lot of them to kind of change the flavor of the run and the build a little bit.
Like unlocking the building, the ability to put like towns out on the terrain. Or sorry, they're suburbs. And then you put enough suburbs together, it becomes, you know, so this is good.
They're towns in the, in the basic map. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Villages, just, actually, I think.
Yeah, no, it's not just the towns that you put. So the villages you put on the road. I'm talking about the suburbs, which you can place like you place mountains and stuff. I just think it's funny to call it suburbs.
Suburbs is a good name for it.
Yeah. And you know, terrain favors different builds. Like you know, everything that you see about like you look up like, oh, how should I place my meadows? And they say shouldn't place meadows. Meadows are dog shit, place forests.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I haven't played for 20 hours. I don't have forests yet. I need you to try again and answer the question I asked, please.
Yeah. Classic any game with a big meta thing. And it's just, you know, people, I understand that. Like the tips I give for Isaac are probably not actually useful for beating Isaac anymore. I'm not that person anymore. I've changed. I've prayed on it.
Yeah.
I've done therapy. I've talked to my family. I'm no longer that person. there's two other systems that this unlocks that we alluded to. Supply. These are kind of like ring slots. You fill these with things that you either find or craft. I hear they'll kind of give you just modifiers, you know?
Yeah.
Furniture, tools, food, jewelry, things like that.
It is funny to be out on a run and get like an alert that says, you found an armoire.
Yeah. Ooh. It's that Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. It is. Your little pixel guy gets a hand truck, like a furniture dolly.
Boys. Yeah. and then crafting, which allows you to is an exchange, money exchange, currency exchange thing. Like you're breaking down extra supplies down to resources and chunks and can turn those chunks into random items from a category. Like you're doing alchemy, kind of.
Yeah.
With this.
What? How many armoires turns into silverware?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The encyclopedia just gives you lore and mechanical information as you encounter things. Mechanical information are like the rules cards, you know, for this, like what things, you know, once you find these synergies and then also just the stats of what a thing does.
Yeah.
You know, and these are more, some of these are more complicated than just we let on. Like we described it very simply, but like I love blood groves.
Yeah.
Like that's a really cool thing, a cool risk reward thing. It will, you put them down and you have to discover them, but they will eat monsters at a certain percentage, you know? So once they get to that level, they'll die.
Yeah.
But then they also can spawn, you know, extra tough monsters.
Yes.
Like swamp things, it seems like from time to time. Things like that. Getting that information, having those stats, like it's at this percentage, it does it in this, you know, this field and stuff can be useful.
Yeah. Blood groves are really great because it's like you don't have to finish off enemies. Like once they hit like 15%, they're just gone.
The regular ones are 15. I think you can up that to 30.
I also I like the when you unlock treasuries as well.
Yes.
You don't want to like opening them gets you just a ton of stuff, but you don't want to do it too fast because it puts out gargoyles.
Yeah. That can join most encounters.
Yeah. Oh, and then battlefields as well, where you can get
treasure chest.
Yeah, but you, like, the strategy on placing those is neat because you have to put them beside a road. But if you put them too close, it turns the road into a wasteland, and then like these blood clot enemies appear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's stuff to it, and finding having a kind of codex for that.
Yeah.
There are four bosses in this. They all do different things. I only beat the first boss of this, and he's a real gotcha. IMO, because he appears at camp with a bunch of Lich Palace tiles that spawn in the empty squares around your campfire. Each palace buffs his health and damage. There's just one of them. He does slow and powerful attacks, but if you let him make all of his palaces, you know, he will wear you down.
Yeah.
The counter for him is either to have a bunch of Oblivion tiles saved up or to surround your camp.
Yeah.
And it's like, first, is that thematically interesting? Like, is that something that, like, makes sense from a flavor perspective for the Lich? I wouldn't say so. Is it something that, like, is interesting once you learn it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yes, that is something that you have to, you can account for. Mm-hmm. So it is a equation. It is a setup with an answer. Yes. I now know next time I play, oh, cool. Like, now I know to put things around my camp.
Yeah.
There's nothing that hinted about that. There's nothing, there's no push-pull around that. There's no, like, downside to putting things around your camp. Like that, because you can put what you want around your camp. You can choose to put things that are not going to impact you very much. It's just the key. You just unlock it. It's almost like, you know, the password is orgy. And then when you fight them the first time, they say, you don't know the password. And then you go home and learn it.
Yeah.
Next time you just come in and say orgy. Darkon. Mm-hmm. It's the password. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So like the way the Lich got me was, you know, I'm playing as the warrior, for my first run because you don't unlock other stuff for a while. And I found that attack all was really, really effective, for, you know, just clearing out enemies, fewer attacks to, you know, you're not working through things one by one, completely ineffective against the Lich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So he'll counter, if you go all in on attack all, no one help. If you have, you know, as long as you've gotten rid of his stuff.
Yeah.
You have a relatively powerful build, I did not find him that
glorious.
Mm-hmm. When you beat him from a story-wise thing, he says, no, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on to the next boss, which I never fought. I did the second biome a few times, but I never got up to the boss.
Yeah. I got pretty close on her, but boy, it's hard because this is the priestess. And her dialogue is like, you know, no, like the destruction is God's will. You know, I'm here to enforce it, basically. And she summons, like she brings in adds. She doesn't do anything really herself, but she'll summon angels that will fight for her, kind of like the necromancer. And she also summons stained glass windows, which will shield her. This is interesting tactically in a game with no tactics.
Yeah. This is, you just do attack all. You know, like the first one, don't do it. This one, boy do howdy.
It. Yeah, do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, okay, can I like outrace her ability to summon these things is essentially what this is.
Yeah. The hunter is the next one, fights alongside hounds and gets a big heal and damage buff when a hound dies. Mm-hmm. He's going to divert attacks away from himself and onto the hounds so this can happen to him. Yeah. It's almost like he just has phases.
Yes.
You know, at that point, since he diverts attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to this guy. I watched him and read about him and watched YouTubes about him.
Yeah. Then you have the Destroyer. This is the final boss. This is the god. And it's otherwise like a pretty straightforward fight. However, every third attack he does temporarily erases a stat or a piece of equipment. So like he can just take away, you know, one of your advantages.
Yeah. Obviously, could be a huge problem.
Yes.
Like, and I imagine this feeling very unfair. If you finally got a build that can fight the Destroyer, it relies on a key piece of equipment that got erased.
Yeah.
That is teaching you not to rely on equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have very many things I'm doing. like one of them is making an equipment choice. Don't take that away from me.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, you know, build in such a way that you get advantages from a bunch of different stuff.
Yes.
That you equip, like make sure you have a bunch of overlap. So one being taken out doesn't completely, you know, obliterate you. But like, I don't know what I do as a necromancer if he eliminates my max skeleton stat because suddenly I don't have any skeletons.
Well, and it's a, even though you can put your eggs in multiple baskets to avoid this, having your eggs overlap is one of the only verbs you're allowed in this game.
Yeah.
Like in terms of decisions you're making, I want to maximize a thing.
Yeah.
You can get rid of one of the things, but like the point is the synergy. Like, there's a class that works really well with it. It's one of the very few things you're doing.
Yeah.
I hate the idea that this boss just takes that away.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, that's going to work against you. And I don't know how I would design a final boss for this.
No.
It's thematically appropriate. Like, he destroys things. He puts things into the void, gets rid of things. But it makes me feel like the premise of this is so fundamentally flawed. Like, you couldn't do, I don't know what a meaningful and satisfying boss would be like for this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, you make the map of the world, you know, you draw a little dick in the tiles or something. Like, what am I even doing? Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just, it defies, you know, it defies kind of quarterbacking a little bit.
Yeah.
In a way where I don't know what I would do differently. I just know that what they did is something I don't like.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the, you know, to me, some of the fun of criticism is not quarterbacking because I think I could do better, but kind of thinking of other ways to do something is a way of examining.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, yeah.
And thinking like, okay, well, they obviously must have thought of this, you know? Yeah. So like, I'm thinking through like, you know, okay, so there's negative space around this thing that, you know, that I feel is missing. You know, what is it about the other stuff that means that they couldn't do this? Oftentimes it's uninteresting because it's time or it's money.
Yeah,
exactly. But sometimes I was gonna say, it's like, yeah,
other outside factors. You know, yes. It's not artistically. That's part of the fun of it, of criticism, is going in with no budget. You know, or by wedge, all budget, infinite budget, yeah. and saying like, what can I think of that would make this as good as it could be?
Yeah.
You know, and this game for me resisted that because its basic premise and gameplay mode means that I think this is as good as it can be.
Yeah. I think that ultimately it's just kind of limited by the idea, by the core of it.
Same.
Yeah.
There are hidden bosses. If you replace all the roads in the with swamps, you get a Frog King. It's a metal slime kind of thing. 2 HP, but 99% evade rate with high defense. Mm-hmm. The true creators are developer stand-ins. You have to pile 6 overlapping geography effects onto something to get these. And there's a missing no type boss.
Yeah,
that's like just a real Easter egg, real hidden Easter egg.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is Loop Hero.
That was Loop Hero for us.
Yeah, that was Loop Hero for us.
Like, I understand if this is somebody's, you know, this hole was made for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't me. I really wanted, when I was in the early kind of honeymoon period of this, of like 4 hours in, and I was like, oh, this is neat.
Yeah.
I was really enjoying it. And but I haven't played a game that felt like it dropped off and I just hit like a wall of no fun. Quicksand zone.
Yeah.
Like quite as hard in a while as this.
Same. And, you know, thinking about like Loop Hero and its place, right? I think you can, you know, it's not everything, but you can judge the impact of something and maybe even like how successful the idea is or like how fertile the idea is by seeing how much came after that imitated it. You know, and you know, sometimes this creates whole genres that, you know, that get really played out, but like there hasn't been like a rash of like Loop Hero likes. The only reason I bring that up is just because like, you know, you get the likes that are just for, you know, money purposes, right?
Yes.
Like, okay, Loop Hero is popular. Kids are boffo for Loop Hero.
Yeah,
we need,
exactly.
We need to make sure gabble, we get gabble, something gabble. In the stores like that.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, what those kind of like follow-ons are is like, oh, we identified like another angle on this.
Yeah.
That we think would be, you know, kind of really cool. The fact that we just kind of didn't see that, to me, does offer a little bit of support to like, oh, the core of the idea on this just doesn't have an awful lot of like room to hang stuff on it, right?
Yeah. And that can sometimes be a, not having fast follows can be a thing where, or slow follows can be a thing because something is just too unique.
Yes.
You know, and there's an element of that with this where I do think that this is just a really unique kind of conglomeration of other gameplay mechanics. But I think you're right in that like nobody was coming up with ideas to make this better. You know, they took the constituent parts, auto battlers didn't stop, idlers didn't stop, you know, things like that still come out. But the idea of putting them together just ended up not having that much juice. The other thing I would say that is a mark of a roguelite for me that is still good is that I've done just about everything. I'd never beat that fucking resourceful rat, but I've done everything else in Enter the Gungeon.
Yeah.
You put me in front of a Gungeon run, I'm still having fun with the mechanics of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it is fun in the hands. It is fun to do stuff. I am being shown new stuff and doing fun, unexpected things.
Yeah.
You put me in front of Isaac, I'm doing that. You put me in front of Loop Hero, I'm not. The game would be to unlock and make this progress because I am not unlocking and doing unexpected things in most of my play. Mm-hmm. That is oftentimes not true. Like, even roguelites, I don't like. So, like, Dead Cells. I don't like Dead Cells very much. It's okay.
Yeah.
But in Dead Cells, it felt fun to move around and fight stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was still doing something. Mm-hmm. In this, I'm not. Like, I fucking hate idle games. I don't, like, incremental games, I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, someday I kind of want to do Universal Paperclips. Will convinced me to play that one. And it has a theme and an end. Mm-hmm. Which I really appreciate. Like, yes. And it's a good theme.
Yeah.
It's a good resonant theme and stuff. When you're playing it, you're still doing incremental stuff though. And like, I don't have the brain set that makes that interesting.
Yeah.
To me. It does pass time. You can do it and look at your phone and not think, but I'm not engaged. I'm not thinking, I'm not feeling, I'm not having like fun. I don't understand where that part comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a little more amenable to them in a way that I've, you know, not really successfully examined. Mm-hmm. And just like, oh, like sometimes I feel like one and sometimes I don't. But I think that, you know, you're getting at a truth with what you're saying, which is like, oh, what you do matters.
Yeah.
Like what a game has you do, like, you know, ultimately, like, it's not the only thing, but like that is something that you can fall back on.
It's a big thing. Like,
yeah.
a game is a lot of ways what you do in it. You know, it is is the operative verb of game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's why when somebody's like, oh, I fucking love Okami, it's so pretty.
Yeah.
I can't quite get on board with that because Okami, I don't like what you do.
There are a lot of pretty things.
Yeah. There's, you know what, have you been outside? Mm-hmm. Like there's flowers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like pretty is not a hard resource. Same thing with music. You know, I listen to music all the time. I listen to all kinds of music. I come to games for a specific thing for like interaction. This is kind of one of the things. There's a YouTube slop channel that I started watching. I can't remember if I mentioned this already. It's not good. I don't want to promote them as well because I think that they might use AI, but sometimes you just watch YouTube because it's there. That's what I do instead of idle games. I'm no better than anyone. But they are like, I played 20 Frostpunk like games and here are my thoughts on them.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about it is he says, when I was playing this, I spent my time doing this and this is the first statement for everything.
Yeah.
And that's so elemental and good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they can be, it's not just like I spent my time run and jump. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, I spent my time balancing the needs of my villagers versus the amount of tax burden they can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that's the hook.
Yep.
You know, I spent my time doing blank.
Mm-hmm.
When I think back to Loop Hero and I think I spent my time doing blank, most of that is seen missing.
Yeah.
Some of it is comparing equipment. Like once I decided, some of it is deck building and place and tile placement, the good part of it.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is nothing but in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to me a pretty damning thing.
Yeah.
Trying to fire the cannon indoors or anything. Just,
disappointing
a bunch.
Yeah. And, I've talked about this before, but just like the idea of like, just like premise first games crit
yes.
or like, you know, games reaction. Like the thing about Frostpunk that's cool isn't that it's, you know,
it's cold not the pitch.
And it's the end of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the narrative pitch. It's not the same thing that would make a movie of Frostpunk cool.
No.
You know, or like a TV show, or make it picked up for a TV show as a thing. Like it needs to be like a second order of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, for that. Yeah. Like Frostpunk would also be good with different theming and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for listening. Thank you, William, for sponsoring this episode. We appreciate it very much.
Mm-hmm.
If you are listening to this and you are any kind of marginalized person and you have a product or project you'd like us to highlight, please send me an email at gary@techfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, website, description, any useful information. We'd be happy to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have one this week. But if we ever do, if you send it in, we'd be happy to do it.
Oh. Yeah. I'd be interested to hear what people have to say about Loop Hero.
Same.
You have a little bit of time as of when this comes out, but like if you have a counter argument or a different way that this worked for you, Let us know by going to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in. We prefer responses that are specific and concise if you can. Yeah. The deadline for that is June the 15th. It's always the 15th of every month. We're also looking for responses to Baby Steps, which we're talking about next week. For our arcade episode, talk about like weird arcade games, weird arcade experiences.
Yeah, I like how that episode turned out. I hope people like that episode. Yeah. The following month's games are going to be Neon White, which I'm not on. I will be the part of Gary will be played by Gwen for Neon White. Grun, which I am nearing the end of now. Grun's neat. Proteus and Mario Wonder. Baby Steps and Mario Wonder are the premium episodes, which means everybody gets the generalities and patrons get the full episode.
Yes.
You can become a patron at patreon.com/duckfeedtv at the duck level. This is also where you can sponsor an episode, like with Loop Heroes, like with Grun, like with Proteus. We really appreciate that. Yes. And you can hear what we think. Nothing. We will play a whole ass game.
We will.
We can be bought.
A note specifically, Proteus is the SNES version.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you basically have to just emulate that.
Yeah.
Like a Proteus collection would be sick. I would love a Proteus collection. There's does not one exist.
No.
You can also rate review us on podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addicts, wherever you find podcast. Do that, subscribe, talk about us on message boards, talk about us in real life. Tell your friends, we don't advertise. That is how people hear about us.
Yes. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen. Thank you, Gwen.
Big thanks to Gwen. What should they watch out for until next time?
Watch out for the warm syrupy cradle of oblivion.